the red, little red stuff's going.
Okay.
Okay.
So you were going to tell me a story.
Oh yeah, I was going to tell you that I can remember as a little girl. I was with my grandmother, and we went up to a part of Hot Springs that was quite away from our house. And it was dark, and this was a house that was all great big house. And it was very mysterious to me. And we went in there, and then later, and there was a woman there, and I just barely remember being there.
I think that'll come out.
Okay. And my grandmother told me later that this woman's daughter had been raped and killed, and that they hanged a black man in the square in Hot Springs because he did it. Well, who knows whether he did it. You know, they're finding out now. The Innocence Problem Project is finding many, many men, especially who are in prison, mistakenly. But the fact that he was hanged in the town square was something else. So that was just one of those other things.
So you went, how old were you?
I don't know how old. I was very little, but I just remember it was kind of mysterious.
You went to a house.
And the woman in the house, it would have been her daughter, I guess.
Okay.
Who had been raped and murdered.
Okay. Why did you go there?
Well, she was a friend of my grandmother's. The woman.
So you were visiting her
mother. The mother.
Okay. There was something about the house that was mysterious.
Very, very mysterious. But there were several places. As a child, you probably never went to mysterious places, did you?
Not too much.
No, because that's the difference. You know, Faulkner writes about this. I can remember being at other mysterious houses. I was at in Hot Springs. I remember being one of my grandmother's friends. I had a great big house, you know, several blocks from us. And her son, Jethro was his name, had tuberculosis. And he was way upstairs in an attic room. And there was something so mysterious. The house was dark, and it had these big, huge folding doors and big stands with umbrellas in them. And it seems to me that I saw Jethro, but I think he died up there. You know, that's what they did with tuberculosis. Then they isolated the people and they died. So there was that was mysterious. And I guess I can't remember. It'll come back to me other places. But there were mysterious places.
Well, that kind of detail is what I wanted to talk about tonight. I don't know if you want to go back for a moment to what we were discussing earlier.
What?
About the race and classism and so on.
Okay, sure.
Do you remember you were going to tell me a story, or you were going to say something?
No, that was it. That was a story.
Okay.
There was nothing really big or important about it. But
okay.
But I can also remember my Aunt Nan, one of my mother's sisters who had been to Louisiana. She'd been to school there. And she was telling us, I can just remember overhearing it, because my family, while they were racist, were probably not the worst racist, you know, in the world. And she was telling about the fact that this woman, she'd been visiting a woman who was later to become her mother-in-law. And there was something that had happened to some black people, and they had been hurt or something. And she didn't want them to use her car to take them in because they'd get it all bloody and dirty.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that, I don't think my family would have been that bad. I don't think they would have been that bad, but I don't know. Then my grandmother, we always had black servants.
Right.
And I shouldn't say servants. We had a black maid, a cook. And I can remember going to the part of town, Malvern Avenue, where black people lived with my grandmother. And she was looking for a particular woman. And she would say, you know, she would knock at the door and she'd say, I'm looking for Marie Jones. If you see her, tell her Miss Simpson wants to see her. And I questioned her, well, why don't you go to where she lives? She said, and nobody will tell you where she lives, she said. They protect each other. They don't know if somebody's in trouble.
I see.
They wouldn't tell her where she was. They wouldn't tell my grandmother for fear that
get it.
Yeah, that my grandmother would was bad news. Then we had a cook named Maddie. And we went to her house one time. I don't know why. We hardly ever went to anybody's house. I went with my grandmother. And it was immaculately clean, very bare. But my grandmother said before we went, do not sit on the bed. You can sit anywhere, but do not sit on the bed. And I wondered what there was about sitting on the bed. I didn't know whether it was bed bugs or what, but she said, don't sit on the bed. Now, as children, we never had babysitters. I was never in my life left with a babysitter because I was in this house with all these people, and my grandmother was there, and my mother, and then my mother's sisters. And I do remember one night, I don't know what happened, that everybody had to be gone, and we had one of the colored servants. We said colored then. See how I fall into it.
Yeah.
One of the black servants, one of the maids, was there, and she stayed upstairs with us. But we never had babysitters. Nobody had babysitters in those days. And we never went to dances or anything with adults, but it was just that we didn't have babysitters.
Now, your family wasn't real well-to-do, but they were okay financially, from what you said. So my question for you is, do you remember going out to eat?
No, we were not well off. We were not. We were poor.
But your...
My grandfather
was a doctor.
Up to the time that he died, we were all right.
Oh, that's right.
He died in 1929. And after that, we were poor.
And that was the Depression as well.
The Depression came. My mother worked for the welfare department. My mother had two dresses that she wore. And we were very poor. My great aunt lived in the house with us, and she paid my grandmother some rent. And eventually we lost the house to the mortgage. It couldn't get paid.
Really?
But that was years later after, you know.
Was that after you moved out?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it didn't, or maybe I was still there, but it was after I was in high school. It wasn't any major disruption by the time it occurred. But the house was, and I still see it when I go back to Hot Springs, it was in a very good, when it was built, probably the best section of town. Later on, probably still a good one, but...
You referred to it on the tape earlier as, I think, a small house, but then later you said it was a good house
It wasn't a small... The house that I lived in with my mother and father...
That was a small house.
A little bitty house. But the house on Quapaw Avenue was a big house. But it wasn't grand. It was just a big house.
Big two-story?
Yeah, big two-story house.
Front porch?
A front porch with a half roof with pillars.
Okay.
Not these big pillars.
Right.
And I think my grandfather had bought it from, I don't know that anybody had ever lived in it before, but it was one of the first, it had a carport
okay.
to the side. It was one of the first, so he could drive his car into it, walk out the front door and get into his car.
Okay. And it had a sleeping porch out the back?
It had a sleeping porch off the side.
Off the side.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And a great big basement. We had a laundress too.
Okay.
I forgot to tell you.
In 1929 then, did you lose your servants?
No, we always had servants.
You always did. No matter what. That was essential.
I don't know how my grandmother could have done. As I think I told you, the laundress, how did I know this, made $2.50 a week. And she came and worked 2.5 days, I think, or 2 days at least. She came and washed the clothes. And I think she hung them up because we had to bring them in. And then she'd come back another day and iron. And she ironed in the basement with flat irons. And there were electric irons then, but my grandmother said black people didn't understand electricity and she wouldn't let her use them. So she had to use these awful old flat irons with the gas jets. You know how they work? You put one flat iron on it, on the gas jet, and it's heating.
Then you
pick up the other one, and then you iron with it. And then you go back and put it on the jet and pick up the one
yeah.
that that is now hot.
So is that just like sitting on a stove or something?
On the two gas jets, like a little, yeah,
oh,
stove.
Made just for those?
Well, I know it's made, but that's what was down there.
Okay. Well, since we're talking about that house, let's just go a little further. As you think about that house, do you have any specific memories of specific rooms or events that occurred in specific rooms, or, you know,
I've written poems about it.
And I want to go back and read those.
Well, one about the dining room, because the dining room was a dining room, and we ate our meals there. Now, when times got poor, we never ate in the kitchen. We might eat on the back porch. There was a back porch. We might eat back there, but nobody ever ate in the kitchen. I never remember having one meal in the kitchen.
Was there a table in the kitchen?
There was a table for preparing food.
I see.
But nobody ever ate at that kitchen table.
And where did the maids and so forth eat?
Well, they would eat there after we had eaten.
In the dining room?
No. In the kitchen.
In the kitchen.
Yeah, okay. Right. And it was a big table, you know, because we had none around it. We always had a white tablecloth on it, and we had a china closet. And at Christmas time, when my grandfather was probably after that, we never had Christmas cookies. My grandmother would make about 3 or 4 cakes, and they would be in the china closet. And
she'd bring out the cakes at Christmas time.
Yeah, right. And my grandfather, I think I told you, never had to have the best silver.
Right.
We never had silver, but the best flatware,
right.
The best dishes.
Right.
And he ate his breakfast in the dining room too, of course.
You mentioned Christmas. Talk about a little bit about holidays, Christmas, birthdays.
Well, Easter in the South, it's warm, you know. So the Easter eggs would be hidden outside often. So we'd go outside and hunt for Easter eggs. And Christmas, we seldom ever had snow. And I believed in Santa Claus, I think I told you, until I was far too old to believe in Santa Claus, because we had such elaborate Christmases. My family really could not have afforded them, but they just went all out, my mother did. We had wonderful Christmases, just everything I could think of. I couldn't believe all the toys that I would get. And so I can remember a doll with real hair. They had those dolls made, real hair. And then I cut the hair off. I can remember doing that, cut the hair off the doll. Then let's see what else about the Christmases. I guess that's about all I can remember about the Christmases. And Easter, and church, you asked me about church.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went to this Methodist church, which is still there, and I go by it. And I have good memories of the Methodist church. And we went to, the family would go to church on Sunday when my grandfather was living. After that, I don't think they went much to church. But we children were sent to Sunday school.
Right.
But there was not really, as I told you, not really any great belief or discussion about church or that or any of the things any things bordering on religion or whatever.
Sure.
Just
wasn't. What about birthdays?
I had wonderful birthdays, and I can remember a particular one. I must have been 9 or 10. My mother invited some of my friends, my girlfriends, and took us all to the movie and gave us ice cream sodas afterwards. That's one of the best. I can still remember how excited I was over that birthday party. I couldn't tell you what movie we saw, but it was...
And you had sodas back home then?
No, out. She took us out. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, we never... You ask about eating out. We never... I can't remember ever our family having... There was no money for that.
Even when
my grandfather was living. Oh, no. And people didn't eat out then like they do. No, it just wasn't done.
Yeah.
And were there church suppers? I never went to church supper in my life until I got up to Minnesota.
Okay. All right. Well, I have a series of questions.
Okay, go ahead.
To help you remember some things. Now, you mentioned the fights between your mother and your grandmother, and I understand the basis of that. What about, do you remember any fights with, did you ever get, was there any sibling rivalry between you and Babs? Or did you remember any conflict there?
Probably, but I think she remembers it more.
Hmm.
I think I told you, she told me one time that she never had a bicycle. Didn't I tell you that?
Vaguely, that sounds very
well,
familiar.
She said, of course, and she said to me, you were always, she said, people would always say, and Pollyanna is so beautiful, and you have such pretty hair. And she said that's what they'd say to her. And so then when she told me, she said, you never had a bicycle. She said she never had a bicycle. Well, that wasn't true. And so I found a picture of her, a little photograph of her on her bicycle. She always had a bicycle.
Huh.
And so I showed it to her. But she was very affectionate as a child. And they called her the kissing bug because she was so affectionate.
Huh.
And there was rivalry. And she told me, I think I told you this, she told me later that my mother favored me, that she loved me more than she did her.
Mm. From her perspective, as far as she could tell?
Well, I think my mother did.
Mm.
And that kind of bothered me because and it was not that my mother and I saw eye to eye, we didn't.
Uh-huh.
But then she told me this when my mother died.
Oh.
And my mother had, and it comes down to things, you know. My mother had given her, because I think Babs had done something for her, had given her some silver. I don't know where my mother got silver. We never had it. But it was flatware, and it was silver. And she'd given it to my sister. So, and then when she died, she had left instructions, Noel, that she had this big diamond ring. I think I told you this great big diamond ring that one of her husbands, Raymond, the oil slicker,
okay,
had given to her, and she said that was left to me. And so then my sister was talking to me, and I felt so bad. I gave her the ring. I said, just take it.
Oh.
I said, it doesn't matter that much. I want you to have it. So she took it. So
I remember when we went down to Arkansas after your mother died, wasn't that just because you were dividing up,
uh-huh,
some,
uh-huh,
of her belongings, and there was some, not argument, but there was something.
Talk about it. Well, that was the only thing she had that was valuable, was this huge diamond ring. Mm-hmm. Fact is, Scott didn't even know where she got it.
Oh.
And when I was out there in California, he said to me, my mother had that big diamond ring. Where did she ever get that diamond ring? And I said, well, it was from our mother. And so that was it.
As a child, was there anyone or anything, and I know you talked about you, everybody was kind of afraid of your grandfather in terms of he was very strict, but kind, I understand.
Yes.
But was there anyone else or anything else that you feared and or admired as a child?
Well, I feared my mother in a lot of ways because she was fierce, but...
Did she spank you often or not necessarily?
No, but when I started going with boys, boy, she was tough and wanted me to come in, and I, of course, lied to her about what I did, but I was afraid of her. And what else? I got in a fight one time, a real fight with a girl. My mother worked in the courthouse, and I don't know what that was all about. And she said she looked out the window and saw me fighting, and she was so humiliated. And I mean, when she really could get to you. And she made me feel pretty bad about it.
And you didn't have any pets in the house?
My grandfather didn't. My grandfather believed that dogs and pets run healthy. So we never had any pets.
Healthy, I see, okay. Do you remember what would you say as a child, your favorite outdoor and or indoor activity?
I think it was skating, roller skating.
Roller skating.
Yeah, and you know, not in a ring, but right, all over the neighborhood.
metal skate strapped to
Yes, oh yes, right, strapped to your shoe. Because it was such freedom. I could go all over the part of town where we lived. There was no fear of anything. It was safe. And so I just skated everywhere. That was probably my favorite. Yeah, then we would go swimming, but that was just occasionally. Skating was always there. And then swimming, we had two big swimming pools out from town, but you'd have to be driven out to those.
What about indoor activity on a rainy day? What did you like to do?
We played jacks a lot when I was a child. We played a lot of jacks. And we played games in the neighborhood. It's hopscotch and jump ropes and rope, you know.
Sure.
And kick the can and hide and seek. We always did those games in the evening because, you have much longer evenings in the fall and then the spring. So after supper, you go out and play with the neighborhood kids.
You had mentioned this one friend. You mentioned Emily Francis.
Yes.
Tell me about her and or any other friends that you made as a
Well, child. She wasn't my best friend. She was a friend. She was perfect.
Okay.
She was absolutely perfect. And I thought she had a perfect existence, but of course it wasn't. But probably one of my best friends was a woman named Elizabeth Pittman, whose father was a postman. And she was a friend in high school.
What did you, go ahead.
Her father, I didn't have friends, the doctor's daughters and the lawyer's daughters, I was not necessary. I didn't, there was a crowd when I was in high school, for example, that was the in crowd. And I never belonged to that crowd. I was never asked to be with that crowd. I was never that popular. And Elizabeth didn't belong to that crowd. And I always thought that there was something wrong with my family. That because the other people who I would look at, the doctor's daughters and the lawyer's daughters and the people that had the money, things seemed to be just right for them. And I thought, well, there's something really wrong with my family. And also because of the quarrels. I just thought, well, no family can quarrel like this and have these terrible fights, not fights, but just, quarrels. And it's just not normal.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Just a question on Elizabeth Pittman. Do you remember doing having a favorite thing the two of you did together or enjoyed doing together? You mentioned roller skating, but...
Well, with Elizabeth, by the time I knew her, she could play the piano. She was a wonderful pianist. And we'd walk up the mountain. There was a mountain right there by where I lived. It was almost on the side of the mountain. And we'd hike up the mountain. And I can't remember anything in particular that I did with her.
All right, let's talk about these fights. Were they always between your mother and your...
My grandmother.
Grandmother. Once in a while between your mother and grandfather?
Oh, no. These were after my grandfather was dead.
Okay.
My mother would not have... I don't know what my grandfather would have done with my mother if she had been as insistent on having her ways. I don't know what he would have done.
And the fights usually were about your mother's
her sexual
male friends?
Yes. Because she had male friends.
Right, you've named several of them.
Yes, right. And they were not the kind of men that she would ever marry. But she liked them and she was a sexual being and she was tough. And she knew what she wanted and to hell with anybody else.
And this was especially hard on your grandmother because your grandmother was very concerned about appearances.
My grandmother was. Yes, indeed she was. I meant to tell you when you were talking about ages of people. No, who was asking me? Somebody else was asking me about the age I was of marriage. My grandmother was either 14 or 15 when she married my grandfather.
Yes, I remember.
I did tell you
yes.
That, yeah. So Oh, Lucy was talking to me, and I forgot to tell her that. But,
So the knockdown, drag-out fights, how long would they last? 10 minutes? 2 days?
Oh, no. Maybe an hour. And then sometimes my mother would get furious and go out and get in the car and drive, slam the car door and go drive away just like crazy. And I'd worry about her because I loved her and I was afraid she'd
get something or...
Yeah.
They were never able to resolve their differences?
No. Never. But, when my grandmother... When my mother was sick, my mother was ill with cancer when she was about 30, then I would have been 10 because she was about then. Was she 30? Anyhow, my grandmother just was just like a, I tell you, nobody could have given my mother any more love and attention. You know, Dorothy Day talks about love as a fierce and awesome thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of love my grandmother and mother had for each other. It was fierce, but they did love each other. And that's kind of hard.
Mm-hmm. I guess I forgot that your mother had cancer when she was 30, because obviously she totally relapsed, totally conquered it, or whatever,
yes.
For many, many years.
Yes, right.
Oh, do you remember what kind of cancer it was?
Yeah, it was cancer of the bladder, not mm-hmm. of the gallbladder, but of the urine bladder. And mm-hmm. she was cured. And it was kind of, I believed it there, and I want to believe it now, that prayer cured my mother.
Huh.
And belief. What did they call it? Spiritual healing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got interested in that. In fact, is when we lived in Wyndham, there were a group of us that studied it. Spiritual healing. And my grandmother, who never knew anything about that, did exactly what the practitioners of spiritual healing recommend. For example, she would not admit that my mother was so ill she was about to die. And so when people would meet her on the street and say, well, I hear Pauline's about to die, my grandmother would say, well, you heard something wrong. So people thought my grandmother had lost her mind. My grandmother said she's getting well. And the doctors even had given up on my mother, and my grandmother didn't. People would come to see my mother, and my grandmother wouldn't let them in the house. She'd meet them on the front porch and say, sit down, we'll talk. She can't have company. Because she did not want them in my mother's...
Because they'd give her a certain feeling that they were really sorry for her and sad.
Right. So I thought about that for years, that it was almost a miracle. Well, actually, that was the first case in medical history, as far as we know, with that particular kind of cancer that had been cured at that time.
Wow.
She went to Johns Hopkins, and I've forgotten how that happened, how she was able to get that kind of attention. But she was. She'd been working at the welfare office, and somehow she... because she did go up to Maryland, and that's where she was treated. And they used radiation then, and at one point I was in the hospital when they lost radiation needles, where they lost them in her wound, and I could hear her screaming because it was hurting her so.
Oh my gosh.
But I thought later, you know, if that could have done it. I mean, they got to places that they probably wouldn't have tried to get to, but she was totally cured.
How long was she sick?
Six or eight months, maybe. I know why she got to Johns Hopkins. My mother then was working in Hot Springs. They had a venereal disease clinic. The government did.
Uh-huh.
What was the name of it? But they, still going.
Okay.
They treated syphilis, and so she had done a lot of social work kind of stuff for the welfare department, and they hired her, and I think it was a fairly decent job, and she did intake. So she talked to people who came there were indigent but got free treatment for syphilis. So I learned all about syphilis.
I lost something there. How did you learn? I mean, your mother worked in this, so how did you learn all about it?
Because she'd be talking about it, you know. She'd come home and talk about syphilis and this and that and so forth. So we learned about it because she would talk about it.
Did your grandmother like that when your mother was talking about it?
Well, that was all right. That was okay, just so long as my mother would watch what she did, but she didn't. And so she had a variety of jobs. The last job she had before she died was she worked for the, community chest or something like that. And it had a little prestige and it was paid her fairly decently. And that was good. She worked for them for quite a while.
Then she died in like 1960 or something?
She died, it would have been around the latter's. I think she was alive. I'm trying to remember if.
I remember her coming to Marshall once.
Yeah, I think she was alive. I'm trying to think if she was alive during the 68.
No, I don't think so.
Well,
let's see, when we went there, I thought I was 12. But that would have been 67. She might have died in 66. Or 67.
67, probably, because it was around the time of all that activity.
Yeah, okay.
Because she told me one time she'd seen some people on television, I think, involved in the peace movement. She said, I was worried for fear I'd see you with that riffraff.
Oh. did she die of the same kind of cancer?
No.
Okay.
No, it was, and I've forgotten the kind of cancer she died with, but it was
not.
You
went out there and visited her?
I did. And my sister was out there, and her husband then, who was Frank, and my sister said to me, you know, I was there, I didn't stay too long. She died after I left. My sister said, you know, and I love my sister, but she said, just having you here for 3 or 4 days meant more to her than all that I've done for her, because she'd stay with my sister. My sister had done a lot for her, so. They were very much alike, though, my mother and my sister. Barbara was not as tough as my mother, but she was, in some way, she was a little bit ruthless.
Did your friends or anyone ever get you into trouble? Do you remember getting into trouble, serious trouble of any kind when you were young? Now, you've mentioned some minor things, but I'm not sure when I remember what they were, but I know you mentioned a couple of things. You were.
I was a pretty good kid.
You were pretty well behaved.
Yeah, I was afraid of my mother.
That'll do it. Did you do chores? Or did you have to do chores?
We had to make our bed. And I complained, we had to bring in the clothes from the line. And we griped about that terribly.
Okay.
And we didn't have to do many chores.
Did you get an allowance or anything? Or?
Oh, probably not.
That kind of thing wasn't. Mm-hmm. Do you remember your first date? Or your first love?
Well, I can remember, the first boy I cared a lot about. His name was Howard Smith, and I think he had quit school, and I was crazy about him, and he liked me, and he sent me flowers, but he didn't like me real well. He didn't like me as well as I liked him, and then he got married. Then he came back, and I saw him, and did I know he was married? I don't know. But that ended it. I mean, that was the end of it.
What was your first job? I know you weren't able to work. They wouldn't let you work until you...
No, until I was out of high school.
Okay.
I did work maybe one summer, but for nothing. For the Red Cross, a woman named Jean Gaydon. But I was just doing, just helping her with the Red Cross stuff at the Veterans Hospital. But my first job, was at a doctor's office. And I made $5 a week. And I worked, I think, 5 days a week. And I had a terrible time, but, you know, he wasn't paying much. And I couldn't remember faces and names. Somebody would come in one day, and I wouldn't remember them the second day that they came in. And then from that, I went to another. He got sick, and so his son-in-law hired me. And he had some other women working for him in the office, and they did not like me worth a hoot. And
why not, do you think?
I don't know. I just don't know, but they did not like me. And the doctor didn't like, he was really, the son-in-law was mean. The man that I worked for was, and he would, the old man would try, I think he tried to kiss me, or he kissed me one day, and he was old enough to be my grandfather, I think. And but he was kind, he was okay. This other man was impossible, and I think I got another job. But all my money, I couldn't keep a dime. It had to go home because we were so broke that they needed every penny that I had. I may have kept a dollar or something, but it was all needed. I resented it terribly, and I think I said so.
Now, nobody at home, not your mother, grandmother, or grandfather earlier, or any of your aunts or sister, had any bad habits per se? There was no alcohol in the house, at least not when your grandfather was living.
No. No.
This was just to pay bills. And nobody had an expensive habit or...
No, there was nothing...
No luxury, anything.
No. I think my mother stole from the government when she worked someplace, or Jinx did, one of her sisters, but it was all kind of small stuff.
Okay. what were some of the crazy fads or trends that you went through as a youngster, fashion or anything that sticks out, like a dress or an outfit or something you did? Or
I can remember that we had slumber parties, and they were driving cars. I must have been in high school, and that one night a bunch of us were in a car, and we were driving fast, and it was late at night, and the cops stopped us. And then one time we were driving on the sidewalk. That was the trend. Have you ever done that?
No.
It was late, and so you drove your car on the sidewalk.
Wide sidewalks.
I don't know, just to be crazy.
Yeah,
just to be crazy.
Huh.
And in high school, I told you, I didn't drink until I was 21 years old, maybe 22. I never had a drink. And nobody ever, my mother drank. But I just decided I didn't want to.
What were we talked earlier about people having a passion. As a youngster and then as a teenager, what were you crazy about? Was there something
I wanted to be,
matter? Or?
I wanted to be liked.
Okay.
And I wanted to be popular.
Okay.
And I wanted to have pretty clothes. I was not particularly liked, and I was not popular. Popular in terms that people wanted to be with me, and I don't know whether I threw out those high school albums or not, but there was this little in-group that really, they were on the that did the yearbook and that did all this other stuff, and I was never part of it. And
so you like social things interested you. I mean, you would enjoy going to a party. You mentioned a birthday party that you enjoyed.
Yes.
I'm just seeing if there's anything else. I mean,
I did go to dances. There were dances, and
okay.
I would, not always. I can remember feeling very lonely not being invited, but I did go to dances, and we did dance, and I did love to dance. I forgot to say that. Yes, I did dance.
What were the dances back then?
Well, you know, it was Well, swing, I guess.
Swing?
Yeah,
jazz?
Yeah, yeah. Swing more than jazz, and there were tag dances. You know, you didn't want to get stuck with somebody. That meant you just dance and dance, because the boys would then come up and tap, you know, you know about that.
Remind me.
A tag dance, they'd come up and tap the boy on the shoulder, then he'd have to leave and you'd dance with a new boy.
Okay, and then what, every so many minutes you'd switch again?
Yeah, right, and you didn't want to be dancing with the same boy the whole evening, and it was just horrible to be stuck with him, and no boy wanted to get stuck with a girl. And we danced the hotels in Hot Springs. The Arlington, which was the hotel, permitted the kids to have dances there. So they had them in the ballroom, and they had little gold chairs. So it was really a lovely place. It wasn't a gym or something like that. So there was a little glamour around the dances. And we all wore formals, too. Now, boys didn't, but the girls all wore long dresses. And I always had those. My grandmother and my mother would make something over for me. So I had a long dress. Now, Jinx, my mother's youngest sister, was popular, and she belonged to a sorority, which was the best sorority.
A high school sorority.
And Gloria, Jinx's younger sister, had got a name for herself as being fast. And so they would not take her into the sorority. Mm-hmm. And Jinx heard about it, and she had fixed it all up, and so Gloria was supposed to get in. And by a ruse, somehow Gloria did get, they did ask her, and then they took it back.
Really?
I was there at the house the day that Gloria, they came in, there with a bunch of girls in the car, and Gloria came out, and as a pledge, you did this big bow, you know.
Okay.
And she did a big bow, and then they told her that she couldn't belong.
Oh, why did that make her feel?
Well, you can imagine. It was, and I wrote a poem about Mary. I still remember the girl's name. Mary Elizabeth Relier was the girl that was the instigator. And I wrote a poem to her.
So how many girls were there that came in and said this?
A carload.
Really? And it was like, for them it was, sound like they had a mean, they were mean-spirited about it, obviously, because otherwise, they could have sent it in a letter. One person.
Oh, absolutely! But they called her out. She came out to the car. She came out to the car because when they honked, I guess you were supposed to go out.
Okay.
So, see, I'm a year behind Gloria in school, and so they didn't ask me either. And that was the sorority. Now, Gloria did join the second sorority, which was not as good as the first one. And they asked me to join, and I just said no. And that didn't make me well liked either, that they asked me and I said no.
Sure.
But.
Let's go back to this ballroom at the Arlington.
Yeah.
You mentioned that it had gold chairs.
Uh-huh.
And chandeliers.
Oh, yes.
And a small 3 or 4 piece band or something?
Oh, they'd have a band. Yeah, it would be live music.
More like a full orchestra.
Well, it was not like the bands today. It would be more. Now, I've forgotten how they paid for that, but it would be live music.
Okay.
It would be like regular live music, and it would be a band. Yeah, it would be a regular band.
And this tag dance. What did they stop the music when it was?
Oh, no.
There
would be certain boys that would just go stag.
Oh, I see.
There'd be about maybe 8 or 10 of them would go stag. They wouldn't have a date.
So they just wait a few minutes and take somebody?
Yeah.
Okay.
Your ideal was to be the most popular girl there and be tagged all, have your date tagged all the time, so you were just going from one to the other.
I see. And you mentioned, I know I've heard the term hand-me-downs, but you're using a term called makeovers. The dresses were made-overs.
Made-over. Yeah. Well, they were hand-me-downs, but they were all made over.
How do you make over a dress?
Okay. I'll tell you the one that is the usual one. Is my grandmother would have this big box, and so it would be kind of fun to relive it, you know, because now I would appreciate it. She'd look at this dress and she'd say, now this, and Gloria would be there and I would be there, and probably Babs, my younger sister, but maybe just Gloria and me, because we would be the same. We were more or less, we were the, just 10 months difference between us. And she'd say, well, I think this would be for Gloria or Pollyanna. They call me Pollyanna. And then she'd say, well, we'll just cut the sleeves out of it. We'll make a jumper. So they would cut the sleeves out of it and make it smaller, and then I'd wear a blouse with it. So yeah, all our clothes were that way.
They'd cut something or?
Make it fit.
Make it fit, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you say you remember one particular dress that you had. Did you say that?
Oh, what my mother made me when I went for the high school prom. I've got a dress here someplace. You've probably seen a picture of me, a pale blue organza dress with ruching all around the bottom. It's off the shoulders.
Okay.
And my hair, I bleached my hair then. It was kind of blonde.
Really?
Real blonde. And, I thought I was gorgeous in that dress. My mother copied a dress worn by an opera singer, Gladys Swarthout. I can still remember it. And made it for me.
You saw it in a magazine?
Uh-huh. My mother was a beautiful seamstress. My grandmother could sew. But my mother was probably brilliant. My mother was so smart. And my mother could sew with perfection. My grandmother just sewed like I, kind of slapdash, not my mother. When my mother did things, my mother could paint too. She never developed that artistic side of her, but she had done a beautiful box for me. And when Connie was a little girl, well, maybe not so little,
box.
Yeah, it was a beautiful, I think I still have the box, but she had painted it, and she had, I don't know where she got the box, but it was, you know, big, and she had painted some sort of a design on it, and I really loved it. And Connie, when she was maybe 13 years old, maybe 14 or 15, got the paintbrush one day and painted that box red.
Oh my gosh. Oh, were you upset?
I was to some degree upset. You know, the reason when we were living in Marshall, I read something that the Friends had written that affected me, and you probably don't know that, and you probably never thought it affected me or that I showed any difference, but it did. And the Friends said, examine your possessions and see if the seeds of war are in them.
Oh, yeah.
And once you really believe that, it made a big difference in my in the way I viewed things, especially when you kids would hurt them.
Oh, I see.
That I would say to myself, why should this is not important, you know, forget it. There were other things that. I'm trying to think. There were one or two other things that the Quakers said that just really affected me.
We'll get
into them. Yeah.
I was going to go somewhere else, but if you're okay,
yeah.
Since I've got a lot more to go, I think a few more. We'll talk a little bit more about your childhood.
Okay, go ahead.
Leave that. Was there any famous person growing up, movie stars, anybody? Did you go to movies, many movies?
Oh, yeah, cowboy shows on Saturdays.
Okay. Saturday mornings?
Saturday afternoons.
Okay, cowboy
as
shows.
Cowboy shows. Yeah.
Did you like those?
Oh, yeah, I did. I can, Tom Mix and, let me see, who else? Buck Jones and you wouldn't know any of these people. Richard Arlen and... I don't remember the women who were in them, but I did. Well, that's what there was. As I got older, of course, we saw other movies, but this was Saturday afternoon.
Were there any movie stars or any famous person or president or anybody that you...
Well, I loved the movies, and I wanted to be a musical comedy star.
A musical comedy star?
Oh, yeah, and
was that partially, you think, because your mother was a...
No, I just wanted to, because of the movies, I think.
Okay.
But I couldn't sing. And I did take dancing lessons, but, you know, wasn't... But I collected in our basement, we had one room when the house was built. I think they thought that maybe a servant would live in this room. That was, it was paneled in the basement.
Which house?
In, on Quapaw Avenue, the house I grew up in.
Oh, okay.
And so it was maybe a room 12 by 14 with wood paneling.
Okay.
And what I did, and I don't know whether Gloria helped me or not, I cut out pictures from, they used to have what we call the movie star magazines.
Yes.
And, you know, and so there were pictures of movie stars, and I pasted them all over the walls in there. Yeah, because I wanted to, I like those movie stars, and I'm trying to think of one in particular. Well, Mae Murray was one. I'm trying to think of the women. And Esther Ralston. And somebody said I looked like somebody, you know. But that was it. I never did anything. It was, no,
so you went down there and pasted these up, but you didn't do anything in particular in that room. You just,
No.
It was just a place to put them up and...
Uh-huh, think about it.
Did you ever do anything, did you put... Oh, let me back up to a different question. In your house, were there newspapers, magazines? Was anything subscribed to?
Fashion magazines.
Fashion magazines.
I don't think they were subscribed to, but that's what we had. Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. I don't mean just ordinary. I mean right. At the top of the line. And my grandmother would make clothes for her, for Nan and Faye, who were in college during some of these years. She would make clothes for them.
And... when your grandfather was alive, did he read the newspaper a lot or any particular magazines?
I can't remember that he did especially.
And then after he died, nobody yet?
We took the paper.
You did take the paper.
We took the paper, but there was no particular interest in things that were going on in the world.
Did your mother read the newspaper? Do you remember her reading the newspaper?
She must have, but I don't remember any conversations particularly. I can remember listening to the radio when the Prince of Wales abdicated to marry Mrs. Simpson.
Yeah.
I mean, and I remember that event. And then as far as the things leading up to World War II, no, I don't remember.
You mentioned the radio. Was that something your family gathered around the radio and... listen? Did anybody have a favorite program or anything at all?
We listened to Amos and Andy. You know what that was?
Yeah.
Talk about racist.
Yeah.
And we never thought about it being racist.
Yeah. Anything else?
I can't remember any other show.
Let's see, when did TV first come along?
Well, we didn't have TV, for example, even in Wyndham for a long time. Well, we got it when we moved up on the hill. Moved up to Rolling Green.
It seems like, I think we want to go back there again at some point and talk some more about your mother. It seems like as we're talking, she is, figures pretty prominently in,
right,
in your youth. I mean, they're,
yeah,
almost larger than life.
Yeah.
But, question for you, do you remember pulling any pranks on people? Did any of that go on in your house? Or
not,
you know,
really.
You know, mischievous?
The only time is when I told you about the time my mother put the whiskey in the vinegar cruet for Jinx.
Oh, yeah.
That.
And did Jinx know that she had done it? Or no, Jinx hadn't known because Jinx didn't want to drink, right?
That's right. Well, and she figured my mother had done it, though, and she accused her of it.
So how did it, in the vinegar, but then the vinegar went in what?
In salad. You put.
Oh, okay, so she had liquor on her salad?
Uh-huh. She had, yes. So she had put the vinegar, she had it in her salad, and she was furious with my mother.
And why did your mother do that, you think?
Well, because she thought Jinx was puritanical and it would be good for her.
Okay. All right, let's see. As a youngster or teenager, can you remember any favorite colors, foods, books, movies, songs?
Oh, I can remember. I remember all kinds of songs that came out when I was in high school.
You listen to the radio a lot, all like most teenagers do.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me.
Hey, tricks. Oh no, about no, the music. I never, have. Yeah. Oh yeah, I can remember a song that you probably never heard. Oh, the music goes down and around, whoa, ho, 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 and it comes out here. And so the songs that they play at the dances and that we'd hear on the radio, and some of them very sentimental, and I love them. Yeah, yeah.
The popular music of the time. Not,
absolutely.
Not country western. Or
oh, no,
specific,
the popular music.
Popular music. Okay.
Yeah, and then of course, my mother played the piano, you know.
Right.
And so there was the piano. And then I did take piano lessons, and which was a sacrifice for her to pay for them, and I never applied myself. So she would sing songs, and then we'd sing around the piano sometimes, and then my mother and I did play duets together. And and occasionally, once in a while, I'll hear one of the songs, and it's always very moving for me to hear something that we played duets together.
Do you remember any of them at all?
No, but they were classical, you know, they were, and I guess I don't think she ever knew how much I loved her.
She probably did.
Hope so.
Can you think of any, what your favorite color or food or book or movie might have been? Did you read many books as a youngster?
Oh, I read all the time. I'd have books when I'd take off my shoe and sock and be reading a book before I put the other one on. All the time, and they fussed at me because I was always reading. What did I read? I read anything I could get my hands on. Novels, mostly novels, I think.
Remember the names of any books or authors?
But not always. For example, Bertrand Russell wrote a book called Education and the Good Life.
Okay.
And this woman that I worked for, that was from the Red Cross, told me I should read that book, and it didn't affect me like it should have. It did. I thought it was a wonderful book, and Russell in there talked about education, and
so where did you get your love for reading? Who from? Anybody? Just
well, my mother read. When you asked me about magazines, I guess we did have. There was a magazine called the Literary Digest. I think she read that.
Okay.
So she read, and my mother's sisters all went. My Nan and Jinx both got degrees from college. So there was an overall acceptance that education was good, and I was good in school. I made A's and B's. And I thought I was going to college. I was like these kids that, I don't know how I thought I was going. It was just going to drop from heaven, and I was going to go. But I studied, and so when I graduated from high school, I had enough to get a job as a secretary. I had business training. But I also had studied Latin and taken all the stuff that I could have gotten into a college. But we never had, you know, and my friends went, and I can remember the first few years after high school how lonely I was, really lonely, because everybody that I knew had gone to college, and I was left there. I didn't have a date, didn't have anything for a year or two. It was blue.
So you read all the time.
Did
at school, did people know you were a reader, or were you, you know, did your friends, well, did it?
No, was I known as an intellectual or something like that?
No, more like a bookworm. I mean, did you carry around a lot of books at school and always, or just at home?
No, I don't think so. I think I just
read whenever.
Just read, and I went to the library a lot. I can remember
you did.
That. Yeah, yeah.
And just for a moment, was the library there an old building, a new building?
Well, it was not a very big library. and it had the typical librarian, an old lady that didn't want you to take out the wrong kind of books.
Okay.
And no, I just read everything.
Okay.
My grandfather had medical books. After he died, they were all upstairs in a certain place. We were not supposed to look at them. And of course, I did. And I saw pictures of women in labor and terrible, what they call eclampsia, which is you die with the stuff, you know. And so I looked at all those. And my grandmother saw the books had been out, and she asked me, and I said, no, I didn't look at them. But I looked at all those books. And what else? Oh, and then we had encyclopedias at the house. We did have those.
Like a Britannica or whatever.
I've forgotten. The Book of Knowledge, I think it was. And
you looked through them?
Yeah, I read them. And I didn't read them religious. I mean, right. I didn't read one right after the other, but I did read them. And
no Bibles at your house after your grandfather died, or I assume he had one. Did he read it?
Oh, I'm sure there was a Bible there. And of course, in Methodist Sunday school, there right. were always, and then at Christmas time, we would get Bible books, story of Joseph and Moses and all those things. We did get those.
Bible books, you mean like little gifts?
A book, we would be given a book for Christmas, which
I
was
see.
A Bible, which were Bible stories.
Story books. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, we always got those, yeah.
Was there, okay, as a child or teenager, what was the thing you think you struggled with the most in terms of just growing up? I mean, whether it be, anything. Kind of a wide open question.
Well, you know, at that time, every young girl had to be married. And I would wonder who in the world I would be married to.
It concerned you.
Yes, yes. Who?
Because you knew you were going to be married. It wasn't
yes.
a question of if.
No, I would have to be married. But who would I marry? I mean, where would I meet them? I mean, I didn't think about it in any analytical way in terms of, well, where shall I go and do this and that. But
how would it come about, and would you be a
yeah,
good
what
man?
Was going to happen to me? I mean, where would I be? And I mean, I think that was the thing I used to think, what's going to happen? Where am I? Where's my life going?
Uh-huh.
Where am I going to be? What's going to happen to me?
Do you think you might have thought that because some of the, like, your father moving away and leaving town and some of the other things that you had witnessed, that you were more concerned about that, or do you think every girl, at least back then, worried about the same thing?
Well, I don't think Connie and Barbara worried about those things. Melinda may have, I don't know. But I think I felt kind of rootless, I guess that was it.
Rootless?
Yeah. And the boys that I liked didn't like me, you know.
Okay.
I had to decide I wanted.
But you were very beautiful.
I had bad complexion. I had terrible acne.
Not in the pictures I've seen.
No, but I...
Were they touched up?
No, but I didn't. I was not... I did have a bad complexion, which was
until
very
your
bad.
Early 20s or something?
Yes,
or
yes, yeah.
Thinking back over your childhood, is there any other memorable event, something you wish you could have done differently, something you were really sad about, anything else that sticks in your mind? just in that, from that period of your life?
Regrets, you mean?
Regrets or some great, wonderful thing, something that just really got you excited or you were happy about, or we could even go off into the historical context. You mentioned, you know, World War II, whatever, or World War,
No. One thing I think that's still true of me today, that I don't know whether I've thought about that over the years or whether that occurred to me again, and that is that you hear Renaissance, that person's a Renaissance man.
Okay.
Meaning that they have a lot of information about a lot of things.
Okay.
I had a little bit of information about a lot of things, but I never really excelled in anything. I never really, never, to this day. But the way that I have come to look at that, though, it doesn't bother me anymore. Because I've come to realize that the willingness is almost all there is number one, let's say, the willingness to do, to be involved, and to know that you're not the top, that you will never be the top, but that you get pleasure out of whatever it is you're doing, and so that has to be enough. That has to be enough, because the people that want to be number one, that think, my God, I've got to achieve, are never satisfied. Even when they get to the top, they're afraid somebody's going to come up and beat them. And so over the years, that's taken me a long time, I've accepted that there I am.
I remember you used to talk about your writing when we were in Marshall, and you'd say, probably by the time I get published, it's not going to mean anything to me.
Oh, and I believe that.
Yeah. You've mentioned your mother and how much you cared about your mother, but yet you were also afraid of her.
Yeah, and I love my grandmother, but my grandmother didn't know how much I loved her, my grandmother, because my grandmother was a different kind of a person, really different from my mother. My grandmother was not as brilliant as my mother, but much more grounded than my mother ever was. So we just understood one another. And I there was a time when I wrote her, I used to write her every Sunday for years.
Your grandmother?
Well, I'd write her letters, just what I was doing. I mean, after I was married.
Really?
Yeah.
Would she answer them?
Not much, but I knew she wanted to hear from me. But she did write a lot when her daughters were in college. I can still see her writing them. Yeah.
We're going to close this chapter, and we may revisit it, but just one or two parting questions. What was the biggest trouble you were ever in as a teenager? Do you remember? Does anything stick out? I mean, we've already said you were pretty well behaved, so it probably wasn't anything too major.
Well, you want me to really shock you?
Okay, well, that's what we're here for. I mean, we want the whole story.
I slept with a boy, and my mother walked in on us.
No kidding.
One boy before your father. And he darted away. And
in the house.
Yes. And my mother hit the ceiling.
Your mother hit the ceiling.
Oh, my God. And she told me I couldn't see him again, ever. I couldn't go out with him anymore. And so I said, okay. And then later, and I didn't. And then later, that was not Howard. That was not the first fellow that I really cared about. Then later, he got married. And my mother asked my sister, I think it was, how I took it. Well, by that time, I didn't care that he got married.
But she hadn't forgotten that, obviously.
Oh, no, that was... And it was kind of funny. I mean, my mother, for me, she just didn't want me to do anything wrong. No,
she didn't want you to follow in her footsteps.
No, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So, and he was okay, but it was just a good thing I didn't marry him. I don't know where he is, and I never cared after that. It was just one of those things.
Sure. Yep.
So, but and she, to her credit, she never lost confidence in me, and she never acted like I was going to sleep around with everybody I met. Mm-hmm. She never did. That was a done deal. But that was something. You can imagine.
Any other memories of your mother from your childhood? Any special event or occasion or one particular rainy day or anything else that comes to mind, an experience with your mother growing up or as a teenager?
There's just so much about my mother. My mother told me one time that a man was in jail because of her, because something she told me, in other words, you listen to me because I'm a powerful woman. That's what she was telling me. I never did know what that meant.
That she testified against somebody?
I do not know. She never explained it to me, but that evidently it was somebody that she had it in for that ended up in jail.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know. I don't know. And then she got in a big fight with one of the neighbors down the street from us, and that was terrible. And I don't know how that finally ended up. But she was such a person, there was no recriminations. I mean, she wouldn't
hold a grudge.
Oh no, but she didn't feel sorry either.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it was done. I don't know how she ever evolved, to tell you the truth.
What do you mean?
How she came to be, you asked me that.
Right.
I just don't know. I don't know. My grandmother said she could still see her as a little girl when they lived on the plantation, because my grandmother and grandfather lived on a plantation at one time.
Okay.
And they could see, she said she could see my mother walking on the ridges on the cotton plantation, just mad about something. So it was just part of her being.
Yeah, they lived on a plantation, they didn't own it. They lived there.
They actually, my grandfather owned a plantation at one time. That was before my grandmother moved. The plantation was on the Mississippi River, and the river changed course and it took all the land with it. They lost all the plantation. Hello?
Turned off. Yeah.
I never ask enough. Really, this is good in a way that you're doing this, because we don't do this enough. I should have talked to my grandmother for a long time. They lived on a plantation, and so he must have been a medical doctor then, because he was a medical doctor when she married him. So how he practiced medicine then, I don't know, or how that worked. But the Mississippi River did change course. They must have been in Mississippi at the time, or it could have been, it must have been in Mississippi. And so he lost, all the land was washed away. So the part of the Mississippi that they lived on is south of Memphis, near Helena, Arkansas. I mean, that part of the Mississippi. So it's somewhat south, it's really hard to describe it, but it's not way down south. Mm-hmm. It's on the Mississippi.
Right.
So anyhow, that they did live on a plantation.
You know, you mentioned your grandfather and the plantation now, and you had mentioned a sawmill that he owned.
He also owned a sawmill.
Did you ever go there?
I can just barely remember it. And, yeah. But he was an entrepreneur, as you hear. His brother was Marion, and I think I told you they came from this little town called Sumner, and that I found out, didn't I tell you this?
Yeah, about the boy.
Yeah, and then I read in a magazine, the Grisham published this magazine called The Oxfordian. John Grisham, that writes the mystery stories, okay, writes the murder stories. And I think I told you, then I, because there was an article in one of this Oxfordian about this town, Sumner, And I wrote them and found out that I had a relative there yet. And he wrote me back and sent me other stuff. And it was so Southern and so, and full of stuff that I had to put it aside.
What kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, just about, I went over, I found one of my cousins that lived in Texas, and I went down there, and it was relatives and kind of, it was just not something that I wanted to pursue, looking them up. I mean, I would never go there.
I see. Yeah.
Looking them up.
Okay. Well,
what was the last question? Was that it?
I've asked it. Now, I probably got a half an hour left on the tape, so I could stop the tape and we could go a little longer.
Let's do it while I'm here, because I'm going to be gone for a month.
Right. So we've somewhat thoroughly covered your childhood, your growing up. And your grandfather died, and you went through the Depression. Now you didn't back up for a moment. You didn't give me anything on the Depression itself. Do you have any strong memories of that time?
Well, I can just remember that I can remember one time in particular that I wanted 25 cents, and I just thought, where am I going to get 25 cents? I mean, that 25 cents, I didn't have it. And getting school books for us was such a big, and I don't know, there was one of the crazy. We could not have used school books. We were not permitted. We had to have new books. That was one of
those. So where did the used school books for what the school provided?
I mean,
you could buy used books.
You could buy used books, but that was out of the question. Okay. We had to have new books.
This was coming from your grandmother.
Well, I don't know where it came from.
Okay.
But
that's the way it was.
That's the way it was. We had to have new books.
Huh.
And then shoes were something else again, because they had to be bought new. We had to have new shoes, because you couldn't, you don't wear hand-me-down shoes. And so, what else do I remember about the Depression? I can remember we used to, once in a while, relatives would come to town, and it would be a big thing to get in their car and drive up and down the street in a big car, because we didn't have any big car. We had a car, but just to kind of show off.
Right.
That was to make the drag, they called it.
Sure.
And let's see, what else? And my grandmother, one of the things my grandmother said was, it's just as easy to love a rich man as a poor man. She wanted all of her daughters to marry rich. And she said that again and again. And she was serious. So,
That stuck with you a little bit?
No, not really. But I think that I never wanted to... I'm more of an intellectual snob than a money snob.
Okay, so
maybe you're at the end of your maybe you
no, I'm fine. You graduated from high school,
yeah,
and you got a job, and you continued to live at home,
yeah,
for like 2 years or something,
yeah, mm-hmm.
And then you moved away.
Well, I got this job in the doctor's office.
Right.
And then I got a job working, where was it, for an engineer or something, Moreland. I just remembered his name today. He was a nice man. I knew his son. I didn't get a lot of money with that, but I got paid fairly decently. And then I got the job, twice I got a job away. Now, I can't remember. One time I got a job, my mother must have helped me do that, with the WPA, which was the Works Progress Administration, mm-hmm. And I moved to Little Rock. And I lived with a friend there, and her mother and her brother. And he had TB too, and he lived in a room way back off. We never hardly talked to him. Yeah, it was really sad, that stuff. And then her name was Etoile Matthews. And then I think my mother, what happened then? Because I went home. I went back to Hot Springs. Then I took civil service examination.
Okay.
And passed that. And then I decided I wanted to go around the world. That what I really wanted to do was to see the world. That I get a job with the government and I would
see the world.
So that was a nice idea. And my first stop was to be this army camp, where they were building this army camp near Little Rock. And I went back and I lived with a woman who was a friend of my mother's. She had this big rooming house, which was lovely. And there were people there that I really enjoyed, had a wonderful time there, and worked at this army camp for a year and a half. And that's where I met your father, was at the army camp. And of course, by that time the acne was gone, and I had the pick of the crop, whoever I wanted to go out with. Your dad was just a buck private with no car and no nothing. But I did go out with him.
So they were building an army camp. It wasn't built yet.
It wasn't built. I went there.
Was he part of the first wave of?
Yeah. After the camp was built, I went there. Worked for what's called the quartermaster in the army. That is the building part. I don't know what they call it anymore.
Okay.
The service of supply, and so we worked there in one building, and they were buying material and there were contracts, and I just worked as a stenographer and a secretary. Then I worked, after the camp was built, then I was hired in the office, what was called the transportation office. Somewhere here I have a picture of me in that office. And there were about eight of us, and I was actually the chief clerk, just under, my boss was a lieutenant. And we made out the little slips, what's called transportation requests. And if you were a soldier and you were going, let's say they were sending you to Fort Belvoir, that's the name that just occurs to me, to be in the chemical warfare school for 3 months, you'd come in and I'd give you a transportation request for a round trip ticket, and you'd take that to the railroad and they'd give you a ticket.
I see.
So we were in charge of
all the movements of soldiers.
Yeah, and also the troop trains.
Troop trains. You have to explain that to me. I don't know what you mean.
Well, the troop trains were when the troops were leaving and they were going to abort a debarkation, which means that some of them wouldn't be coming back.
Oh, I see.
And so I didn't actually go down to the station, but I would talk to some of the people, and there would be mothers and fathers and wives and babies, and everybody would be putting on a big face and smiling and all this kind of stuff. But you knew that some of them wouldn't be coming back.
Did you know that? Did you think about that as you were
doing that's where I became an idiot. I became a radical right there. I just decided that could not be, that there was just no reason for this. And then that's where I watched the bayonet practice. And I saw it the other day over the TV. They showed a form of it. And the terrible things that the sergeant says to the men and the bayonet. And they're still doing the same stupid stuff and how to gut them. And then when you do that, you don't just, you call them a name. You call him a raghead. You call him that goddamn Haji, which is what they call the Arabs. And because it's not enough. People who are raised in churches, see, if we really want to continue this stuff, we've got to quit teaching our kids the message of Jesus, mm-hmm. because it messes them up. If you teach them from the beginning, it's okay to kill, they come back not half so messed up. But they are too confused.
Sure.
Because even the worst Christian is not going to tell his kid, go out and kill people.
Right.
And so they come back now, 50% of them, Mike,
right.
are so messed up. And I never cry.
I know.
But when I think about some of this stuff, it just really gets to me how we can do this to people.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know why it bothers me any more than it does. Maybe it does bother everybody, but they don't know it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure a lot of people think there's nothing they can do about it, you know.
Yeah, well, that's why with this Every Church at Peace Church, I do have hope. Mm-hmm. I have hope that we talked to this wonderful woman today. It was that, and the people are interested in. I really think, you know, that we should go to the Lutheran bishop of this of the ELCA.
Yeah. Because it's very liberal minded.
Yeah, and because we're at it. We're like the troops in the field while they're the generals, mm-hmm. and they don't think about what the stuff that's going on between here and there. That they can do, that I think they would do, if they saw it. Now Lowell Erdahl, he's just dying to talk to any churches that'll have him talk absolutely on the nonviolence of Christ. He and I have become good friends, and
really?
His wife, yeah, just through this every church. I mean, through the people of faith that I attend.
I can, I'll recommend them to my men's group. I mean, I'm not a member of it anymore, really, but they are always looking for speakers.
Yeah, he's good enough. Yeah, he's very good.
It'll be the opposite end of what we've had so far.
Really? You haven't had people advocating war?
Well, no, but we had a retired pastor talk about a just war. What is a just war?
See, we're doing, we're working on a play that
pantomimes?
Not pantomime, but it makes it, that it's a satire, makes it ridiculous.
Right.
With skits showing, how do you love, because with the just war, you're not supposed to hate them. You're supposed to kill them with kindness, in other words. How do you do that? I mean, if the whole thing is asinine. It's impossible. It's impossible. So anyhow, we're having, and so we've had several a group of us is working on it with ideas, and we've got two people who are involved in the theater scene here in the Twin Cities that are working on it. And then I've written this satire called Princess Faye. You've heard of it.
Right.
And so I think that may get done too. And it's crazier than the other one. Much crazier. But it's the message is there. But it's a satire, so it's not obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So anyhow, but that's because I'm me.
So we've kind of hit the hit the mother load here.
Yeah, right. Well,
with that memory. So you worked with. Can we talk about it a little more?
Yeah.
So you worked in this office.
Yeah. Right.
You knew when you started working there as a military, obviously. You knew.
Yeah, it didn't bother me a bit.
I didn't think about it.
No, I just knew there'd be a lot of young guys there that I'd be popular, and I was by that time.
And the women that you worked, was it all women in the office that you worked
with? Oh, no, we worked with the military.
Right, but I mean, was it in the office itself, the other people you worked with?
Well, for example, there was a general, there was a general and majors and colonels and all kinds of officers.
Okay.
And then there would be some enlisted men, like your father, who would come in from time to time with special training. And then the civil service workers would be a lot of the women.
That's what I was asking about.
Yeah, civil service workers.
So did you become friends with some
of them? Yes, with quite a few of them. Most of them. We were all pretty good friends, yeah.
And did you talk at all about
war?
What you were thinking or feeling?
No, because I didn't know. It took me a long time to sort it out.
So while you say that this was kind of the, perhaps the beginning of...
Yeah, my passion.
You didn't know it was starting there.
No,
really.
I didn't know it. I didn't know it.
But...
I finally did. And every day I said to myself, when this is over, you're going to find out and you're going to do something. Whatever it is, you're going to do something about this. You are going to do... And I told myself that every day for after I got into it. You're going to find out.
How long were you there? On that base?
Well, I'm trying to figure out when the war started. I was there before the war started, for about 6 months before the war started. And then after the camp was built, I met your father. Then I met him, and then we went through one whole year till the next December when we were married. So I worked there probably a year and a half or 2 years.
And so at some point during that time, you came to this realization after you'd been there for a while.
Right, right.
And
right.
And you started saying this to yourself.
Yeah. And yeah. Now, I don't know why, because now my sister was in the war. She was in the war.
She was in the service?
Oh, yeah, she was an Army nurse.
Your sister was. Oh, okay.
She was in a MASH unit.
And where do you know where she served?
She was in France. I've got pictures of her in France.
Okay.
And she came home pretty upset, but not with the same conclusions that I had. And she told me that the men that she, you know, she was in this MASH unit in a hospital taking care of men, and they'd cry and say she reminded them of their sister or their wife and so forth and so on. And she was a little bit this way, but she was not anti-war. Not at all. But there are others. Now, one of the women that I know at St. Joan's, Lynn Sibazar. Audrey, and I never remember her last name. But she was also a nurse, and she ended up just where I am, except she's worked as a nurse. But there's kind of an affinity with people who really share that kind of passion. And so...
I'm going to ask you a hard question.
Yeah.
Did you see any coffins coming back?
Nope.
You never saw, where people were saying goodbye, you never saw a sad scene?
No.